Taking Stock with Pim Fox.
You tell lies, thinking I can see. You can't cry because you're laughing at me. I'm down.
How can you laugh when you know I'm down? There are a whole lot of investors that are probably asking that question after a day like today. And maybe with the numbers out of Hewlett-Packard that we just saw, there may be a few more tomorrow. In any case, what's ahead for stocks? It's always a question worth asking, especially after a down day like today. And so that's what we're going to do here on Taking Stock on Bloomberg. I'm Dave Wilson, filling in today as the sole host of the program while Pim Fox takes the day off. Sorry, Pim, I know how to spell your first name, but I digress. With us in the studio, Michael Scholl. He's the Chief Executive Officer of Oscar Grissom & Son. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us here. I tell you, down day, you look across the market in stocks, you see the Dow Industrials, not so bad, 1.5%, the S&P 500, 2%, NASDAQ Composite, 2.7%, you know, people kind of focusing on what's happening in Libya and what it means for the oil markets. But I've heard so many people saying this market is due for a pullback, especially after almost a six-month rally. As you look at the whole business with the oil in Libya, does it look like a reason or more of an excuse?
You know, I think more of an excuse than a reason. I don't think anybody has a clue what's going on in Libya at the moment, certainly in terms of its longer-term implications. But, you know, we said last week that this market was dealing well with bad news, and we can say today that it's dealing less well with bad news.
So what does that tell you, that sort of shift? I mean, given that it's been through its share of bad news. I mean, obviously what's happened in Libya is sort of part of a sequence of events, including what we saw in Egypt.
Well, you know, what's been really interesting about 2011 so far is this, you know, massive divergence between the U.S. and Germany and to an extent Japan and what's been going on in emerging markets. It's the biggest divergence that we've seen since 1997 for an up market. You know, we're used to the U.S. outperforming emerging markets during a drawdown. Very unusual to see, you know, the S&P up, you know, 6%, which it was this morning for the year, and for the emerging market index to be down about 5%. And you know, the question that you had to ask was how long could this continue? And the answer was going to be that either emerging markets would stabilize and start to rally, and but the worries about inflation in these countries and the responses of central banks to inflation in these countries would subside, or you were going to see an acceleration to the downtrend and the U.S. participate in the party a little bit.
Well, we've certainly had enough people talk about the concept of risk on and risk off. You know, the whole idea that there are some times when you want to make relatively risky bets and emerging markets sort of fit that category. And other times you want to sort of pull your horns in and U.S. stocks being the beneficiary of that. Is it really that simple, sort of investors pulling back and trying to avoid risk where they can?
No, it's more complicated than that. I mean, clearly on a day like today, it's a risk-off day. You know, you see Treasury yields down 10%, 12% across the curve. It tells you where the money's going. You see the NASDAQ going down by more than the S&P. You see the S&P going down by more than the Dow. You know, today is a simple risk-off day, but it doesn't mean that over the medium to longer term, anything has changed today.
Well, let's talk about the S&P 500 because I know you go through a whole bunch of charts every week and you looked at that one. You suggested that maybe 1275 would be where stocks might find some support here. I'm seeing the index closing at 1315, so you're talking 40 points down. Do you figure that projection holds up after what we've seen?
Yeah, that seems like a reasonable number to use. You know, that takes you a little bit below the 50-day, which I think is the number that most people will look at. And if we hit 1275, we would be flat for the month of February, and we would still be up several percent on the year. So, you know, it wouldn't be a big deal, in my opinion.
Just a matter of pulling back a bit now that we've gotten pretty much all the earnings reports out. Hewlett-Packard being sort of the notable example today.
You know, I mean, basically the earnings have been great. I don't think you need to worry about the quality of corporate earnings in the United States. But clearly on a day like today, anybody who's given any sort of a disappointment is going to get punished.
Some perhaps more than others. I'm looking at the Hewlett-Packard, in case you missed it earlier. They came out with their first quarter earnings report. Their shares trading at $45.75 now. They're at $48.23 earlier. Their first quarter revenue fell short of the average analyst estimate in our survey, and also their projections for earnings and revenue in their fiscal second quarter short of projections. We'll have more in a moment with Michael Scholl. He's the CEO of Oscar Grissom Sons. You can call it karma, call it love. Me, I just don't give up. Bounce, bounce, nothing's gonna keep me down. Bounce, bounce, stay. There are a whole lot of people who would like to see the stock market bounce, I suppose, especially after a day like today. And with Hewlett-Packard's earnings not quite meeting up with what analysts and perhaps investors were looking for, well, it may be a few days before we get one. But anyway, we have to look at what's happening in markets here on Taking Stock on Bloomberg. I'm Dave Wilson, and with me here in the studio, Michael Scholl. He's the CEO of Oscar Grissom Sons. Michael, you get a day like today, and then, of course, Hewlett-Packard, not a great sign for tomorrow. But, you know, the other side of it is we've been up for almost 6 months. Pretty much straight up. So do stocks have the capacity to bounce if you look out, you know, a few days or a couple of weeks, given what they're being hit with now?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the last time you saw the S&P look anything like this, we think, was the 1998 to 1999 rally, you know, which started in the mid-900s and ended up at 1420. And interestingly, if you overlay this S&P 500 with the S&P 500 of 98-99, you know, pretty much around now, you know, that index fell 100 points from 1375 to 1275 and went straight up to 1420. So, you know, that tells you it can happen. It doesn't tell you it will happen.
Of course, 1998-99, right in the heart of the internet bubble. You've seen reporting lately suggesting that this time around technology stocks are doing well, but that the gains are justified because of their performance. And then you look at Hewlett-Packard. I mean, where does this leave us? How much confidence do you have in technology stocks at this point as market leaders?
Yeah, I'd have a lot of confidence, but you've got to look at technology in aggregate. I mean, you've got to understand what's happening in technology and precisely why people are excited is something new is happening. There's a difference between the use of technology today and the difference in the use of technology 5 years ago. I have no idea what weakness is behind H&P's earnings, but you know, one of the things you have to look at is PC usage versus tablet usage and smartphone usage. You've got to understand that really, I think the exciting story is the consumer spending more in aggregate on technology. And then you leave it to the bottom-up guys to tell you that Company X is doing well out of this and Company Y isn't.
When you look across industry groups, I mean, energy is an obvious one to focus on, given what's going on with the price of oil, given how, you know, events in the Middle East are pushing it up. Is that a place when you look, because I know you pay a lot of attention to charts, when you look at the charts on energy stocks, do they look good to you? Does it sort of reinforce what's going on, shall we say, more fundamentally?
Well, you know, I think what's interesting about crude and energy is how little they participated in the rally from 2009 through to the end of 2010. I mean, suddenly, you know, they sort of kept going. Crude oil has pretty much been range-bound for about a year and a half. It's poking its head above that range on all the disturbance in Libya. It may or may not keep those gains. But, you know, the XOI index and the energy sector within the S&P 500 really didn't participate in the early stages of the recovery from August through October, and then only recently got going. So, yeah, that sector, you know, looks pretty good at the moment.
Well, I know you keep an eye on crude as well, and I asked the question earlier to John Licata, Blue Phoenix. I mean, we've seen, if you look around the world, oil above $100 a barrel, just not here in the U.S. When you look at the charts on crude, do they tell you that $100 here we come?
No, it's very much unproven in my opinion. In fact, I think the most interesting thing which has happened in crude in the last couple of days is that the Brent crude WTI spread has completely collapsed. It's fallen about $8 from the record of about $20 a couple of days ago down to $12. The question you need to ask with commodities is are we witnessing the exhaustion point in a bunch of industrial and agricultural commodities at this point in time?
Well, I'll put that question right back to you, especially because I know you look at gold, and here we are. Gold's above $1,400 an ounce, but it's the fourth time it's really tried to push above there since November, and it hasn't stuck the first three times at least.
Yeah, well, gold and silver still look the best out of a commodity complex. You know, I don't love them on a, you know, know, I look at the reasons why people buy these metals and I scratch my heads. But as a Chartist, I look at it and, you know, I can't yet say they've definitively broken down. I'd be much more interested in some of the industrial metals and particularly the agricultural commodities. You look at wheat today, limit down. You look at cotton, which had, I think, one of the biggest ever reversals I've seen on Friday and followed down today. You know, you look at some of the long-term charts on those agricultural commodities, and I think the only way they got anywhere near these prices is it was on a massive short squeeze.
As you look across markets, is there any one chart that jumps out at you and says, gosh, we got to start buying this?
You know, I'd say within the U.S., a couple of sectors which have held in really well up until today, I would say is the media sector and the insurance sector. And I don't think they're either of them are sectors people have spent much time looking about. I think the media sector is all about a bet that you can finally get the consumer to start to pay for content on the internet. And that might prove to be one of the great drivers of corporate earnings, you know, in that sector over the next few years. The insurance sector is kind of a more boring story. It's a financial sector which is quite economically sensitive. You know, we always tell our clients it's like an economically sensitive utility. It is regulated. It does have defensive qualities, but in good economic times, insurance tends to go up. And
we'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much, Michael Scholl, Oscar Christensen.
You can subscribe to Bloomberg's premium podcast service at Bloomberg.com/Tom Keen and listen to Taking Stock weekday afternoons at 3 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on satellite radio, Sirius Channel 130 and XM Channel 129. Copyright 2011, Bloomberg LP.